You're listening to Trek FM.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Things are getting worse, just as they did back when I was your age.
Lord Vader.
Yes, Master.
The rebels in the Lothal system. Hunt them down.
As you wish.
The fear. The anger. The hate. I haven't sensed a presence like that since...
The Clone Wars.
My name is Rex. Captain.
Your master has deceived you into believing you can become a Jedi.
Welcome everyone to the 602 Club. I'm really excited. We have a great supplemental episode for you. Disney decided that they wanted to have the episode of Rebels, the premiere for season two, to be here in the summer. And we don't know specifically yet in the fall when we'll be getting the rest of the season, but we had to talk about it. Yeah. You know, it's Star Wars, it's Rebels. John and I waxed poetic for an hour and a half on, I think, the trailer for The Force Awakens and Star Wars Rebels, and so I'm so glad that John's with me tonight. We're just hanging out in the 602 Club because it's just time for more Star Wars geeky time. So, hey, John, how's it going?
Pretty good. Glad to be back. You know, Ruby's really good about stocking what I like to drink. No, I don't even have to ask. I can just saunter up to the bar. She knows what I'm feeling. It's good.
It's nice when you have a usual in a place, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a good feel.
Yeah. Well, I got to say right up front, it's a good feel this season for Rebels. Season two, I mean, it starts off with a bang, mainly because they're in a battle. Yeah. But... this whole episode, for me, felt like, holy shiitake mushrooms! Like, that was, because this is a family show, I can't say what I really said. The whole episode was just full of these moments, and I kind of wonder, what was your first reaction after seeing it for the first time? I mean, I'm sure you probably watched it more than once. I think I've seen it three times now, because I like it so much, so what did you think?
The entire episode, the entire premiere is just confirms, I think, what you and I both picked up on from season one, like, because they had that midway point in season one where suddenly it seemed like things started clicking. And I don't know what changed, but season two's premiere is an absolute confirmation that whatever story notes they got, they were possibly lifted straight out of my dream journal and translated into a show, because it was everything I wanted this show to be. I was like, well, go on, show. Yes, I will stay through this commercial break. Thank you.
I will put that remote down.
Yeah, well, you know, if I'm being honest, I might have started 20 minutes late so that I could speed through commercials, but, you know.
That's wise,
you know,
yeah.
I saw, you know, my Jedi training is strong. I still saw all of the ads, Disney, I promise you. I sort of just absorbed them, but... there was, you know, everything about this episode was a strong choice, a good choice. There wasn't really anything that left me walking away from it saying, I am so excited now for the second season. The trailer got me excited for the second season, and this just confirmed that I have every right to be excited for the second season.
Bruce Gibson and I were talking the other day, and we were talking about the first season of Rebels and how it had kind of struck us, and the difference between it and Clone Wars, and how Clone Wars you know, immediately you knew the importance of Clone Wars because you were dropped in at an important point in the saga with your main saga characters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the only one that was, the ones that were really new were introducing Ahsoka and Captain Rex. I mean, that was what was being kind of really brought to the forefront character-wise. And so you knew it immediately had weight. And I think one of the things for Rebels for me at the beginning is that you weren't sure exactly how important it was going to be, this storyline, because it felt a little bit one-off, you know? Yeah. But the moment that they started, like you said, halfway through that first season, you know, you bring in Frank Oz playing freaking Yoda again. You know, you do the special edition. I mean, they're already retconning themselves with a special edition of the original, you know, Spark of Rebellion episode where you put in James Earl Jones as Darth Vader. You really did start to get those hints that, okay, this show is going to be important. And then, of course, the big one, I think, for everyone wasn't that Vader showed up at the end of the season. It was that Ahsoka showed up, and she was the linchpin for saying, okay, this show is freaking important now. Which, to me, what a huge shift again in fandom, that what's legitimizing Rebels in so many ways is that, and not in a bad way, but it's Clone Wars 2.0. Like, they're continuing that storyline, and I have no problem with that, because these characters are now impacting the importance of the entire saga, because they're connecting with these massive saga characters.
Right. I think you're hitting exactly on the point, which is what made Clone Wars work was these new characters they introduced were in the orbit of the characters that we knew and the storylines that we were familiar with. And by bringing Ahsoka back, by bringing Vader in, by bringing Tarkin in, it put these characters in that orbit. We suddenly have a mutual point of understanding with the characters themselves. They're not just sort of going off on adventures. They're now, I understand where they fit. You know, I might not know their ultimate fate, but I understand where they're fitting as their story goes forward. And, you know, Ahsoka is, what's amazing is she doesn't have an incredible amount of screen time in the second season premiere, but she has an impactful amount of screen time in the second season premiere. These characters, the Rebels characters, are still the main characters, but it's, she is, if anything, like Obi-Wan in A New Hope, where she's not the main character, but when she is there, she's giving direction to everybody.
Well, and what's cool is to see her in that different light, you know. Ashley has talked a lot about in interviews the fact that, you know, she is kind of the Obi-Wan character now. You know, she's the wiser one. She is much farther along, I think, even than Kanan was, obviously, in his Jedi training. So when it comes to all of these things, she's stronger, more secure, and we don't know what happened to her after she left the Jedi Order, but her lightsabers, her outfit, everything tells a story that Ahsoka hasn't been just sitting on the wayside. You know, that she has been doing things. She's been growing. She's been learning. And I think that's what we're so excited about, too, with her, is that there's a lot there that we want to continue to explore. And there's a really great opportunity to explore her alongside Ezra and Kanan. Because, I mean, right, especially in this episode, you know, Kanan continues to show how un-Jedi-like he really is. You know, he doesn't want to work in a military system. He's done that before. He has become much more of a Han Solo character than he'll ever be of, say, like a Luke character. And that's really interesting to have him be the one who's supposed to be training the proto-Luke with Ezra. And so it's great that Ahsoka's there now to kind of help, if hopefully some of that guidance for Ezra. It's just a really interesting dynamic to see how these characters are some ways tipping the Star Wars archetypes on their heads a little bit and playing for different effect. And yeah. I think it's really working for me. That's what I was, one of the things I was really responding to in the, you know, this premiere.
Yeah. But as much as we love Ahsoka and as important and wonderful it is to have her back, I don't think that you can overstate the added weight that Vader's presence has because yeah. And I said this when we talked about the episode 7 preview, where it's a matter of episode 7 became real and important to me in terms of anticipation as soon as I saw Vader's mask, and I was like, ah, okay, it's still relating to the Skywalker clan. And seeing Vader, especially in this time period, is, I think, really important. And I think that is something else that's wonderful about this, is there's no context of Vader's holding back a little bit because he wants to take somebody on. You know, he doesn't want to take on Kanan as an apprentice or Ezra the way that he wants to take Luke on as an apprentice or anything like that. He just wants to wipe him out. And so when they get to the fights with him, that he is brutal. He is relentless, and he looks like a Sith Lord. He looks like somebody who is just smacking people down and just like, no, you, who do you think you're fighting right now? And it's a totally different vibe than the fights he has with Luke.
Well, and it was really interesting just seeing Vader, like you said, on screen. The guy is back in black. I mean, he talk about making black the new black. In this, he is uber scary again.
Yes.
You know, he's a New Hope scary again, because you he's this kind of ominous thing. You know, obviously him and Tarkin have this relationship. You know, the governor of Lothal talks about how she's not used to these kind of tactics. You know, she's just an administrator, you know. And you get this feeling like Tarkin and Vader, and Vader more so, he is the shadow dog. You know, like, he's the one who only comes out of the shadows when it's absolutely necessary. And if he's coming out of the shadows and you're in the Empire, it's probably not going to go well for you. You know, he's yeah. coming to put the smack down, not just on any rebellion, but probably you as well.
Right. You'd better, if he's showing up to correct something that you did, that's a really bad sign. And I think, like, what really blew my mind about Vader's ferocity and, like you said, taking him back to the fearful is, first off, the design decision again to have him look like the Empire Strikes Back advertising materials that were rejected and then brought back for Revenge of the Sith, the Celebration 3, that more Macquarie-esque helmet treatment is great. But his ferocity in being willing to use the Imperial Governor not just as bait, though. Like, for him, it was killing two birds with one stone. It drew the rebels out,
yeah.
and he eliminated the problem. Like, that's the relentlessness of the Sith that we expect, that we want, that is so much fun. And so long as we're talking about the Sith, I tweeted out, too, Sam Witwer's work, his voice work as the Emperor, I had to do a double take. I had to check the credits because I was convinced for the briefest of moments that it was Ian McDiarmid back giving the voice. And I mean, hats off to Witwer. He nailed the Emperor. And it's like, okay, good. When the Emperor comes on now, I know it's going to sound right because I know he's there. Wonderful.
Yeah, he's done that before on Rebel Force Radio, before he got the job as being, the Emperor again here on Rebels. And he's voiced the Emperor before as well. I think it was in the Force Unleashed game.
Yeah.
And so he is so excellent at it. And I'm really glad that they chose him to do it because, yeah, he has the same tone of voice and the cadence. Everything is pitch perfect. And no, I'm not talking about the film that you don't like.
But
what I love too here about Vader is this is the Vader that I remember as well from Empire Strikes Back, which is he's using all of these things to get what he wants. You know, So the reason that he doesn't kill Kanan in the fight when he could have easily dispatched him, I was sure he was going to lose his hands because that's kind of the same move he used with Dooku.
Yeah.
And Dooku lost both of his hands. So I'm really surprised we didn't lose a limb here, but maybe that's because it's a Disney XD show.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think in a lot of ways he's playing them in that scene, and he ends up letting them get away because obviously he's got a larger plan at stake.
It seems awfully familiar. Vader seems to be a real fan of putting mm-hmm. a tracking device on somebody. But the thing is, it works this time.
Yeah, it does.
And so you could see, like, it's not like it didn't work this time. Like, you can see why he would use it again, where he's like, see, that's a good trick. And to see him flying, like, he comes alone to deal with the entire fleet, and he's doing all of those tricks and flying the way Anakin did, that was a treat in and of itself. Seeing him go through like a hot knife through butter through all of those ships was wonderful. And there was a very tiny detail that they drew no attention toward, but that I loved seeing, which was no cape while he was flying, which is exactly right and exactly the way it was set up in A New Hope. They took the cape off, and it's like that's attention to detail. And I know I'm sitting here just like throwing the love on it, but the other attention to detail that I have to go back and watch the first season to see if it was there, but the way that the light played through the ship windows when people were flying looked exactly like the lights on the gimbals, that you know, like the way Lucas did it, with the way the light is always panning across through the windows. It looked just like the films. It was beautiful.
Well, you know, speaking of the cape, there's also all the great cape movement as Vader moves, so that his cape kind of flourishes, you know, when he moves his hand, or even the way that he uses his hand when he's talking is very much that Vader movement, you know. And
yeah.
I think everything about him really works. And, you know, just that scariness of watching Kanan and Ezra, obviously, you know, they're like level fours and Vader's like level 60.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just absolutely no match in the scariness of that. You know, it does make me wonder where, you know, in the end Ahsoka falls down on this, because being trained by Anakin, I think that she would have a leg up on a lot of people the same way Obi-Wan would, because she's very familiar with how he fights, how he moves, how he thinks. And even though now he's Vader and his movements are going to be more limited than they used to be, there's also just the raw power that he has in the dark side now. So it'll be interesting, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, I guess. But if that ever comes down, it makes me wonder.
Sure. Well, I mean, you're speaking to the point of the power during the fight. And it's like, trust us, everybody who's listening, if you haven't seen the premiere, even with us sitting here talking about all of these scenes and sort of giving away certain things, we're actually not ruining anything. Trust me, we've both seen it more than once. We're not blowing anything for you, because there is a fight scene and where they basically bury Vader under a bunch of stuff. Yeah. And the stuff goes off and Vader stands up and Ezra and Kanan are standing there. And I can't remember the exact line, but it was something along the lines of, "What can stop this guy?" And Kanan replies, "Not us." And they just run off. And I'm like, yes, perfect.
Well, and I think that was the whole point. You know, if we are going to bring Vader onto the show and we're going to use him like this, if they get away, it has to either be because Vader let them, or it's the move later on that Hera uses. You know, it's by the skin of their teeth. It's not because they were able to best Vader.
Right.
In the kind of like we bested General Grievous way, you know. He needs to stay the scary villain. And I think they've paid him the utmost respect. And so anybody who is worried about that, there's no worry. I mean,
none.
And they found a way by the end of the episode to bring Vader out of the season for a while and bring in the new Inquisitors, which I'm very excited about, because really those Inquisitors link back all the way to the Children of the Force episode with the Clone Wars,
yes,
where Palpatine is doing these experiments on these children to create his little personal Force user army. And I'm wondering how much that's going to play into the seasons of Rebels, whether or not they might have some connection with trying to, find these Inquisitors, or how that's all going to play out. But I just love that they're picking up on these little elements that really connecting the saga, the two shows, and then everything else. It's working so well.
I want to ask you a question, because I was thinking about this because walked through the toy store the other day, killing some time with the kids, so just doing some window shopping sort of stuff. And I saw the big Inquisitor figure there, along with all of the other figures. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, he's dead. Do you think that with the Inquisitors that at some point we're going to see some sort of clone of the old Inquisitor, that they're going to bring him back? It's him but not him sort of thing.
Like he's the Wei-Yun of the show?
Yeah, in a sense. But not exactly Wei-Yun. Like, Wei-Yun was Wei-Yun, but like he just somebody that looks like him, so that you could understand why people would not be able, which Inquisitor was it? I don't know. It was one of them. That sort of thing. Because the aesthetic with the original Inquisitor was very similar to the personification of the dark side in the Mortis episodes in Clone Wars.
Yeah,
it almost feels like it would be a wasted opportunity if they didn't find a way to quote unquote bring him back in some way. Not him. I mean, he's gone. But somebody that looks like him, somebody that looks and sounds like him, would be a neat plot line to sort of like mess with their heads and be like, don't you understand, Jedi? Your time's at an end. The dark side is, going to continually come back. And, now I'm basically going down fan speculation plot lines. But I just wanted to get your take on it. Do you think that would be something we could look forward to seeing, should look forward to seeing, or that does that feel sort of like, nah, they shouldn't go near that?
It really just depends. I mean, they have some really big voices in this show. I mean, Jason Isaacs was the voice of the Inquisitor, and David Oyelowo is the voice of Callus, and that's why you don't see Callus, I think, that much, because you just have these people that have such gravitas, and they do such a great job with the voice work, but I'm sure they're more difficult to get a hold of, but I could see them doing something, and that's kind of, I think, what I was getting at is, will we get to a point where this rebel band, their goal would be to take out the Inquisitors?
Right.
Because you have Kanan, Ezra, and Ahsoka involved, and therefore they can take on these Inquisitors and really bring that that program of the Empire to its knees, take it out. That would be their big thing, while as maybe other bands of the Rebels are working on getting Death Star plans, which we had referenced in this episode.
Yeah.
So, things like that, I could totally see them bringing back somehow that Inquisitor if they wanted to. And because of the Clone Wars and us knowing about cloning, I see no reason why they couldn't make that work, because it's already part of the Star Wars universe. I would completely accept it, and I think it would be, as you say, just a complete mind frack of a thing for this group of rebels to have that come back at them when, Kanan thought he destroyed it and just really mess with them like that.
Yeah. I think that you're onto something there. Like, it could be a really good quest for, like, that's how they contribute to crippling the Empire, is they end the Inquisitors, so that it truly is just the two Sith left. Like, they can't send out minions anymore. That would be kind of a cool plot line.
Well, and the Emperor says to Vader, at the end, the apprentice lives, and maybe she can lead us to other lost Jedi. So Vader and the Emperor are very cognizant that there are Jedi that have slipped through the cracks, even the cracks of the Inquisitor squad.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a fun comic, the Inquisitor Squad instead of the Suicide Squad. And
I smell a spinoff.
There you go. And so it's very clear that we, you know, obviously Vader even lists Kenobi. And the idea of Yoda, you know, so they're aware of some of these Jedi. Who knows who else has survived? It makes me wonder if there's somebody like a Quinlan Vos or even a Saj Ventress type of character that slipped through and they don't want them around anymore, especially since, you know, the last time we saw Saj in the Clone Wars, I haven't read Dark Disciple yet, but... You know, she was much more friendly towards the Jedi and that way of thinking than she ever was going to be probably of the Sith again. So she wouldn't necessarily be somebody you wanted hanging around the galaxy. So there's all these characters out there. And who knows what the heck happened to Darth Maul? Are we going to run into Darth Maul again, maybe?
Oh, now that would be a mind melter. If they actually had Maul and Vader face off in one of these shows somehow... It shouldn't happen. It wouldn't, well, I mean, they could pull off a good way to do it, but like it wouldn't fit because that's a Clone Wars type of thing. Like that's Vader centric. That's not, that would be an episode where I don't even know how they could work these main characters into that, like in a justifiable way. But
what if Maul turned out to be the Asajj Ventress who finally turns on his old master? And the dark side because of the way he's been mistreated. I mean, he, by the end of the last time we saw him in Clone Wars, he's begging for mercy. That's not something you expect of a full-fledged Sith.
Well, I mean, you're saying, okay, yeah, I mean, again, we'll go, you know, we go down that rabbit hole of, you know, writing a sort of like a fan script, but because, yeah, I can see these possibilities now where it's like, you know, he shows up one day and he's like, no, I just want to take out the Emperor and Vader because they're jerks. And I, you know, I don't care about your cause. Point me toward them and I'll take them out. You know, like, but it's enough that I know that we can look forward to seeing Captain Rex later. So
yeah,
I'll take what they throw at me and I'll just be happy for it. And I think that that's really the overarching feeling coming out of this is I'm not tense about the storylines or the direction of the show anymore. This really...
Not at all.
I'm confident that this is going to be the Star Wars show that I want and as a fan that I've been looking for to fill the void that Clone Wars left.
So you're saying this is the show you've been looking for?
Absolutely.
Well, I wanted to ask you, do you think that that's because, as you know, Dave has said that this show is going to have an Empire Strikes Back type of feel this season, and I clearly saw that and felt it when I was watching this episode. Do you think that so many fans are feeling more comfortable because we feel like we're in that, you know, Empire Strikes Back state of mind?
You know, I think that that fits. Yes. And that's because this is, the Empire is still strong. The Death Star hasn't been destroyed. They're still very, very dominant. And they should, when Vader shows up, he should be kicking ass, and when, you know, they're fighting the Empire, it should be a terrifying experience for them. And I think that that is possibly the tone that was missing from the first half of the first season. Was it was too lighthearted. I mean, even the original Star Wars, there's very much a sense of menace to the villains, and that sense of menace is back. And I think that that's really what, I think you're right. I think that it's a more Empire feel and it fits with this time period much better.
I'm just picturing, you know, the amazing James Earl Jones, you know, just saying, you don't know the power of the dark side. That's kind of what I feel in this season is that, you know, I think you're right on that first season. There were so many episodes that were so light and airy at the beginning of the season. And then as they progressed, they got slowly a little bit more serious, a little bit darker, except for the Lando episode. But we're not going to talk about that.
Hey, and Lando came back, and I'm so glad to see him.
He did.
I dig Lando.
He did come back. I want to ask you about that in just a second. But you know, I loved that feeling, that this dark, foreboding feeling, and it really makes me wonder, and not in a Maroon 5 kind of way, but what's going to happen to these characters with this feeling, because I sense danger. I've got a bad feeling about this, you know, with all of these characters, from Ahsoka to the rest. How do these characters make it when they're on Vader's radar?
It's a good question, but I think that, you know, this is where it gets a little, I hope I make sense with this, but they've bought themselves, just with this one episode, the leeway to have a, for lack of a better term, a non-mythology episode or two. You know, something, I think that episodes like this buy them the leeway to have the more lighthearted stuff happen. And I think it works to give these episodes, it will work to give these types of episodes more weight, and at the same time, give us sort of like that relief, you know, that release valve. The entire season can't possibly be as intense as the opener. Like they're going to need to take breathers throughout. What the fate of the characters are, I just think is just very blissfully uncertain, as it were. I think that you'll see plenty of side characters by it, but I think that main characters are fairly safe through this season, at least.
I agree with you. I think that with these characters, you know, I don't know if you saw the Rebels report that they always do after the episode that StarWars.com does. And they showed a preview of the next episode. And the very next episode of Rebels that we will see is the one with Rex and the clones. They're going to be with them. So I think you're right. And that what they're doing is they're setting up ways to expand the mythology without necessarily always having to be this type of intense, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And because they're bringing in those type of characters, like you said, those side characters, I think that really creates this whole opportunity to do exactly what the Clone Wars does, what they learn from the Clone Wars, which is you can tell all these type of stories, but this one we're going to definitely do it more linearly, and it's going to be more interconnected, but we're allowing ourselves to be able to have the opportunity to tell different types of stories at the same time. And but I think this was such a great way to start the season.
Oh yeah.
And really, I guess, set the tone so that I feel like the tone of this season probably is going to feel more like the Empire is always breathing down their neck, like you did in The Empire Strikes Back. And yet at the same time, there will be a reprieve every once in a while.
Yep.
And that'll be fun because, again, you're adding some great characters. And okay, Lando shows up.
Yay.
What's up with his droid? Why does his droid sound like he just stepped out of, like, Harlem?
Oh, I don't think his droid sounded like he stepped out of Harlem, but his droid definitely was...
Had the moxie?
You know what? I like the fact that it's that whimsical choice. It's that used to really be a hallmark of Star... That is still a hallmark of Star Wars, where every so often you get that tiny little character that shows up and it's like, wait, what? You know, like, and it's just fun. I thought his protocol droid was fun. I thought his protocol droid was fun in the way that it cements the idea that the protocol droid is going to be in some way a reflection of either their owner or the people that they're with, whatever, because this protocol droid sounds, you know, smooth and charming the way Lando does. Whereas, you know, 3PO is the worrywart because he's going around with people that where everything's exploding. So 3PO should be high strung. Whereas Lando's droid should be like, hey, what's up? Where's the mechanic? Could you help me out here? Like, he had sort of a Lando-esque personality. And I like that idea that the droids reflect the surroundings in which they operate.
Makes me wonder who TC-14's operator was in The Phantom Menace then.
Oh, wow. You know,
they're Jedi Knights, I believe.
Well, you know, TC was a very diplomatic droid. So probably, well, I got the sense was a very diplomatic droid. So I would say probably not Gunray. He didn't seem like a very diplomatic
sort. Probably
not. Yeah.
One of the biggest things in the entire episode is the moment that Vader is attacking the rebel fleet of ships.
Yeah.
Ahsoka is on the Ghost. Her and Kanan are realizing how strong this attacker is in the Force. She and Kanan are breaching out in the Force together to see how strong. And there's this wonderful moment where Vader, even though he's in the mask, you can almost see his eyebrows go up. And he says, "The apprentice lives." And then Ahsoka on the Ghost, her eyes pop open and she screams and she's out. Like she
Well, yeah, they iris out. They like white out the screen and she passes out. And that what was super interesting about that was she passes out specifically because of the obvious personal connection. But she feels the wave strongest, even though she and Kanan are linked. And using their powers together, he's sensing, basically, she basically has a traumatic moment, whereas he senses something cold and awful and terrible and powerful. She senses something traumatic about who is in that ship. And I think there is no question that Ahsoka knows who that is. I think this could come into play with Rex, you know, later on down the line where she's like, "Rex, I got to tell you something. I think that." And I also want to say, you know, something I'm thinking of right now is that the fact that they had the Jedi linked together and that physical contact, it is a very subtle nod to the midichlorians and the living Force. Because they weren't just sitting together and focused on the same thing. Kanan actually physically touches her. And so the idea that the physical form is an antenna for the Force, and you know the two antenna joining together, you know, makes a more powerful connection. I like that. It's a very subtle nod to the living Force versus the Force itself. That works into the giant mythos of everything.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you. I thought that was a really nice moment. And, you know, it too, I love how Ahsoka just tells him, you know, he asks, "How can I help?" And she says, "Just remember your training." And that very teacherly way that she says that, and she's guiding him on and helping her figure this out. And I'm pretty much with you. I don't think that there's a way that Ahsoka doesn't know who he is, especially with the reaction that she has.
Oh, yeah.
I don't feel like, if you don't want us to think that she knows who Vader is, then that reaction wouldn't be as strong, and she wouldn't be so cagey later on when she's talking to Ezra and Kanan, and she's not even looking at them. But they ask, "Do you know who that is?" And she says, "No. No, I don't." And she's looking away from them. And the way that the eye movement and the subtle, you know, like features of her face and everything. And then later, after the rest of the Ghost crew show up and say, "Hey, we're here to help," and everything, she looks back at them and smiles, almost kind of remembering, I felt like, the good times in the Clone Wars. And then she looks ahead and gets this face of just like abject worry, I feel like. And then like, determination of, I felt like I can't tell them who this really is. In the same way Obi-Wan wouldn't tell Luke who Vader was. You don't need to know. It's worse if you knew the truth, which is, this used to be a Jedi. He betrayed us all, and now he's trying to kill you.
Well, Anakin Skywalker was also a you know, galactically renowned hero. You know,
I
think that it's possible you could spin it as well that Ahsoka thinks she knows who he is, but she realizes that if she's right, what the implications are, and she's got to find a way to confirm that this is true. Like she can't, she's got to be 100% about this. You know, does it possibly spur her on to find a way to contact Obi-Wan and say, you got to help me out with this?
This is how you can bring Obi-Wan back for a cameo or for an episode here. And I think it would be amazing to have those two converse and talk. And can you imagine James Earl Taylor and Ashley sitting and having that conversation in his little hut on Tatooine?
I don't think he'd be in his hut. I think he would be through some sort of like, Holonet relay and very much saying, you know, she's like, I need you to help me reach out. And him saying something along the lines of, okay, look, number one, I can't risk drawing any attention to myself right now. And number two, you deserve to know. And then he tells her the story. And like, imagine what the emotional impact would be to Ahsoka if she, I mean, does she know like what happened to Anna? Does she know about the fight on Mustafar? Does she think he's dead the way Obi-Wan did? Like, what did she know before that moment of contact? You know?
Yeah. I'm personally in my headcanon imagining that they're sitting in his hut so that she can have the freak out moment she's going to need to have, the abject horror, and not be alone, have Obi-Wan there to comfort her, because this is going to be, as hard as this was for Obi-Wan, you know, you were the chosen one, you were my brother, I loved you. This is going to be a tough thing for Ahsoka to hear about her former master in very much the same way that it affected Obi-Wan. It was complete and utter heartbreak.
I don't think it would be in his hut. I think that the hologram would serve to underscore for Ahsoka how the Jedi, you know, I think that to an extent she very much feels like the Jedi let her down and weren't there for her. And something like Obi-Wan being remote would underline that for her, that she was right about the order all along and right to leave. And even if it's not in hologram, I don't think that Obi-Wan is letting anybody know where he is. You know, I think he is very much off the radar.
That part I could see. And the only thing, and the only other reason I would want it to be in his hut, is just because I would also love the conversation to involve Obi-Wan apologizing. Because I do think that Obi-Wan realized the same way that that even Yoda kind of, I think, felt that they hadn't done the right thing for Ahsoka. And so I would I just feel like it would be such a powerful moment of one of the things that you would kind of watch if you watch the entire saga, if you watched all the way through episode one, all the way to episode six, with everything in between, Obi-Wan, you know, admitting that the way that the Jedi had handled things and basically learning the lesson, you know, I think that would just be a great moment. It may never happen. That's what I'm picturing.
Well, I think if it happens, Kanan has to be there. I think Kanan deserves that apology
as
well.
That would be cool too, yeah.
And so we'll get the payoff as the fans for Ahsoka coming to terms. But I think that also the kids watching, like it gives Kanan equal standing and weight, you know, for Obi-Wan to say to him, I'm sorry we weren't there to help you. I'm sorry that we couldn't help you do anything except, you know, sound the alarm and keep you away from Coruscant so you didn't walk into a slaughter.
Well, and this is another thing for now that Ahsoka is here. With Kanan, Kanan's had contact with Yoda. And so has Ezra.
Yeah.
And so that makes for another interesting thing of kind of connecting Yoda, Kenobi, and Kanan with Ahsoka and Ezra. And, you know, again, this brings back to the question is who survives? Because if they really do feel like Luke is the last hope, is that just because he's a Skywalker and they know how powerful he'll be in the Force? Or is that because all of these other options didn't make it?
Well, I think that Luke being, you know, Vader's descendant, I think they know that that's going to carry, that's going to mess with, basically they're playing, they know that that's their one shot at playing head games with Vader, is to have his son show up on the scene and, you know, be like, ha ha, surprise, your kids did live, and have Anakin be like, wait, what? I mean, because that, you know, it shakes Vader, you know, to his core to be like, the kids lived? What?
And that brings together to the love that he had for Padme. You know, and that makes that love legitimate in a lot of ways, because it's his love for Padme and his love for his son that really helped change him back. You know,
I think his love for his son brought him back. I think that it's a whole other discussion to talk about whether he truly loved Padme or not.
Yeah,
and so instead, I'll make sure. That I say that I was so overjoyed since we touched on Vader attacking the fleet and, you know, the different action scenes and everything. I was so overjoyed to see A-wings, especially in the original the original look that they had in the sketchbooks and everything. But the A-wing was always my favorite ship. I've got one hanging on, I'm looking at it right now, hanging on my wall, just to see them flying, and also to see the way they launched, where they ran out
Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, it was cool with Battlestar Galactica. They jumped down in the cockpit from a catwalk. I mean, those guys,
that was pretty cool.
They had of steel. There were parts of them that were made of steel that were jumping into those fighters, and it was like, yeah, they looked like a crack team of pilots. It was really cool.
And then they got decimated.
Well, it's not Vader. Every day that you fly against Darth Vader. It tends to go poorly for you.
Well, I wanted to kind of just ask you about some of the other characters. One of the things that really played well for me in the episode was the relationship between Kanan and Hera. And so much has been kind of made about the fact that they're space married. And they have some kind of relationship. They really do. And it plays very clearly when she confronts him after the meeting that they've had, the top secret meeting that he just invites a hologram to, and the way that she's kind of making him lean up against the door jamb. I mean, it's a very intimate scene. And I loved that they have this super close relationship that we haven't defined yet in the show, but it does make sense to me. You know, I know you're busy trying to help people save the galaxy, but you're also saving the galaxy so that you can hopefully live and have a life too. And it makes sense that these people, it seems like have a very unspoken, close relationship that they don't talk about with other people, and they're not, you know,
see
PDA in it everywhere, but they probably have something going on, or at least an understanding of what they might want to have in the future if they live through all this.
Well,
you know?
I think that there is a more direct acknowledgement as well, because when they're at some point in the episode, they say, okay, kids, make mom and dad proud.
Yes. Kids, do mom and dad proud. Yeah. It's awesome.
And I think
I cheered when I heard that.
I think that it's definitely another sign that they're moving things forward with the show and just embracing. I mean, we keep coming back to how it seems like they course corrected in certain ways, but it really seems just like they just relaxed. And instead of trying so hard, they said, you know what? We know what we're doing. It really feels like they just started trusting themselves again.
Well, and in so many ways, we kind of touched a little bit earlier. You know, Kanan is so much like Han Solo, and Hera has so much of Leia in her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the command presence, the presence where she can have people open up to her and feel comfortable around her. All of those things. And in fact, I think Hera is a much more successful character personally for me than Leia. That might be a very unpopular opinion, but I think that she comes off a much more natural leader type character, and much more just comforting and everything. And I don't know, I really like the characterization of Hera. I think she's one of the most successful female characters I've seen, next to Ahsoka, who is, I think, the best female character I've ever seen in Star Wars.
Well, we've touched on, Ahsoka has the advantage of having a lot more screen time than Princess Leia did. And I think that Hera, her character is in a, she's surrounded by more people. She has more relationships. And I think that you get to know somebody better just by virtue of, if I know somebody in a one-on-one way, that's one thing. But if it's the two of us working together with a few other people, I get to see how they interact with those other people. So we get to see more facets of Hera's personality than what we got to see in the films with Princess Leia. That is not to take anything away from her character, but it's just a more complex personality that gets drawn out. Even if the show were to be canceled after this season, which it won't be, I'm not saying it should be. I'm saying if it were, if there was some nightmare scenario where they pulled the plug on it, Hera has still had more opportunity to interact with more different people than Princess Leia did.
Yeah, that's very true. One of the things that was really interesting was when Ezra and Kanan were standing there at Tarkin Town watching it burn, mm-hmm. and Kanan's trying to talk sense into Ezra, at least what he thinks is sense, which is, we can't, do you see what we just went up against? We can't fight this. And Ezra saying, I'm not afraid. And all I could hear was Yoda saying, you will be. You will be. And so I'm wondering, is this a good place for Ezra to be? Because it seems like in some ways he's found what he thinks of as home, because he says, well, I guess you can't go home again, when he watches his old home from his parents blow up in this episode. Does his security in the rebellion and having a purpose and all of that, and even connecting when he finds his lightsaber crystal and he tells Yoda that, I don't want to make the Empire pay because of vengeance. I want to protect all the people that I care about. You know, he's found his family, but he also wants to protect the universe, not just himself. You know, he's being altruistic. He's being very Jedi in that way. So is that not fear a resolution of doing the right thing because he knows what the right things to do is, even if that means giving his life? Or is that a reckless no fear like Luke had, what we saw in Empire, which was very reckless?
No, I think it's a very youthful, I think it is a Luke-like thing, but a Luke-like thing from A New Hope, where Kanan is right when he says, he basically says you should be afraid, but it's... the moment where they're watching Tarkin Town burn, for me, called back to A New Hope when Obi-Wan says, there's nothing you could have done had you been there. You would have been killed too, and the droids would now be in the hands of the Empire. Like, he's talking, Ezra doesn't fear because he doesn't understand the context of what could happen if he went into that situation.
Mm, yeah.
And it's because he has that same heroic impulse that Luke does, where he's not regarding himself as important enough to be concerned about. Whereas Kanan is saying, it is for other people, but you also need to look out for yourself.
Yeah. It is interesting too, because, unlike Luke at that point, Ezra has now faced Vader and knows exactly what can happen. You could almost get decapitated with your own lightsaber being forced on you by your own hand.
That was a fantastic moment. I love that scene.
So I think there is a little bit of difference in that when Ezra's saying this, he's well aware of the consequences of going back to face this guy again. And it seems like to me he's very resolved at this point to learn more. Yeah. To grow as a Jedi, at least in saber combat and force use, to be able to do what he can. So that's going to be a really interesting thing for me watching this season, because we know nothing about the Jedi in this period. You know, we know what Obi-Wan did for the most part, and we know what Yoda did, but we don't know what the rest of these lost Jedi did. And I think this is just a fascinating, wide open place to be, because, you know, who Ahsoka is now as a Force user is very open as well. She's not Jedi. She's not a Sith. She doesn't really have an allegiance. And so how they kind of help each other, I think, is going to be fascinating to watch. So kind of some final things that I want to ask you, because we've talked about the music before on the show. And
yep,
one of the things for me that I was a little bit bothered by were all the musical cues that were happening from every single part of the original trilogy in this film, all mixed into one place. And when I think about how specific Williams is for the themes he places where,
mm-hmm.
and why he creates a certain theme for a certain thing, I'm disappointed that Rebels isn't getting its own themes for its own characters, so that when we have Ezra's theme, so that we have Hera's theme, Kanan's theme, Sabine's theme, Zeb's theme, Chopper's theme, we have all these great characters that kind of could have their own themes. And when John would reuse a theme, especially with the prequel trilogy from the original trilogy, it usually had a good connection to kind of something that you would see later on. Whereas here, I just think it's like, oh, this is the fun action cue from Empire Strikes Back with the asteroid chase, so we'll put it in there. It'll sound fun. Or from the Ewok battle in Return of the Jedi. That'll be fun, you know. And it's such a hodgepodge that it's lacked its specialness. And as we are going to be talking about in our Phantom Menace episode that we recorded, Williams let you know that you were in the Star Wars universe by the auditory senses that he was just percolating with his music. And the Clone Wars, even though it had a lot of different sounds to it, it still found a way to fit the mood of what was actually happening. Whereas this, because like you had said before, when we've talked about the music, you're so tied to that music in other places, it kind of draws you out. And really for me in this episode, it did, because it was so jumping from film to film. I just wasn't feeling the connection I should feel for me for the music. And I know that's probably, I think a lot of people in general are liking the music, but for me, this episode, it really kind of became more of an issue than it had been even in the first season.
It's interesting. I had sort of the opposite reaction, because something I realized, the reusing certain themes has been problematic for the show. But I feel that this time around, instead of lifting things, they use them as introductory motifs, and the music always resolved and ended differently than it started, which was different than some of the real musical missteps they had in season one. That's nothing to take away from Kevin Kiner. I mean, he has a job to do, and I'm sure that he has notes that, you know, he has to follow and stuff like that. But I also realized, probably this is how I've sort of compartmentalized it to be okay with it, to an extent, is there's a lot of music spotting that happens in all of the movies outside of the first one. And although the special edition of A New Hope, of course, spots Jabba's theme from Return of the Jedi into it and stuff like that. But in Empire Strikes Back, when the Snowspeeders are looking for Han and Luke, it's the same music as when they're escaping from Cloud City. Now, if you listen to the unabridged soundtrack, it wasn't that way. But they purposely, you know, re-spotted the music because it timed better, it felt better. In Jabba's palace in Return of the Jedi, when he is bargaining with Jabba before he pulls the gun, The original music cue for that was different. It's actually the lead up to his flip out on Vader on the Death Star is playing as Luke is trying to talk down Jabba. And then in episode two, like they just respotted a whole ton of music throughout the battle scene for episode two. I mean, it was basically they just lifted bars from, you know, a bunch of different moments and brought them in. This is not to take anything away from the soundtracks for any of the films, but more an intellectual exercise, I think, that I went into to accept that this was going to happen, that I too wish that they would have more original themes, but I felt that there was, even though they reused a lot of music from the films here in the season two opener, I felt like they were trying to make progress toward resolving away from them. Maybe that's just hopeful thinking on my part. Maybe I just got so caught up in the plot that I just didn't, you know, I just decided to shrug it off or something. But, it didn't bother me as much this time.
I think for me, what would help is that if they had some of those original themes, especially for these new characters, so that I could feel connected to them as they then interworked the rest of the themes they were using from the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. I think that would just help me a little bit more to feel like Rebels shouldn't just feel like it's some strange extension to the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. It also has its own place now in the Star Wars universe, and I think musically it should be reflected like that, the same way the Clone Wars is reflected like that, you know, and it had its sound, and Ahsoka had a theme. And,
yeah. I get what you're saying, man, and I'm on board with you. I'm just saying, like, I don't know whether I went through that intellectual exercise to, you know, to mm-hmm. to give it a break or to relax. You know, like I don't know why I spent so much time even thinking about it, but it would have been nice if I didn't have to think about it. I think that would have been a plus.
Well, and I think you gave some good thoughts, you know, and I appreciate that because it does help a little bit my frustration that I had with the episode and kind of being able to look back and see that, you know. And every great composer does that, you know. If you listen to John Williams' catalog, you're going to hear parts of his music from many of his different movies all playing in different movies, you know.
It happens a lot. Have some fun, and you can find some Superman cues in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
They're in there, folks. You got to listen real close, but they're hiding.
Any final thoughts about just anything else we might have missed or just a favorite moment or something like that as we're kind of winding down our Rebels Season 2 premiere?
I think that everybody's favorite moment has to be when Ahsoka made contact. So if I were to pick a second favorite moment, it's definitely going to be when the A-Wing pilots were jumping into their cockpits to fly off, because that was just awesome. That's why I say this episode was like a love letter, because having the A-Wings feature prominently in the first place was wonderful. And then to have their pilots be that just awesome. That was a treat. I loved it.
Well, I really loved when Kanan was kind of getting back at Hera and he's like, I'm going to go make a friend, you know? Mm-hmm. And Sabine's like, Kanan went bucket head, and Ezra goes, I only have the helmet.
Yeah,
I'm kind of jealous. I thought it just reminded me of a conversation that I'm sure so many geeks have had of being like, man, I wish I had the whole outfit, you know, like,
yeah. No, you're right. That is a great moment. It's a great moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this episode is just rife with, I mean, there is so much that is funny about this episode. They really have some amazing humor, and the humor is not overbearing as I felt like it was in some of the early episodes. Like, everything is really pitch perfect here. I mean, they are batting 1,000 already for the season.
Yep.
With just my little tiny critique there of the music is nothing. I would still rate this episode, if I had on a percentage scale, this is 100% episode.
Agreed.
I mean, agreed. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. So, and what's great about it is that I feel like this episode lives up with the best episodes from last season, where you had the Yoda episode, of course, the finale. Those episodes that really stood apart from that season, this one is just adding to that. And it really connects with the best episodes that we had in the Clone Wars. So this team is on fire, and I don't think that there's a Star Wars fan out there who's seen this that isn't literally on the edge of their seat just waiting for when, you know, the rest of season two is going to come. And
right on.
Unfortunately, don't know when that is. So hopefully...
Grr.
You know, it's like maybe it's like just September we have to wait to, you know, that's only a few months away. So I could do it. I can watch this one 1,000 more times again.
They can give us a few books, a few supplementals.
Yeah, that's true. We do have Dark Disciple coming out, which I know you and I both want to read. We kind of want to do a supplemental episode. And that's based on 8 different episodes of the Clone Wars that we're going to do, an 8 arc episode series. So huge, huge. I'm very excited to see...
Yeah.
Of course, with Asajj Ventress being back, Quinlan Vos, and, you know, hearing that some other major characters from the Clone Wars in it as well. So, sounds great to me.
Can't wait.
Well, John, of course, you know, talking Star Wars with you is not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this past week. I know it's shocking, but here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And I'm wondering if it's because the comic book writers didn't understand what the filmmakers were doing, or whether it was because the comic book writers wrote themselves into a corner, or whether it was because the comic book writers wanted to open their stories up to more possibilities.
Earl Grey.
We divide the ship into one of two ways. Port goes to port. I better not see any starboard guys on the starboard phaser target practice. You guys know which side of the ship you're on.
The Orb.
This year, opening for 5-year mission is... Dalrock. Dalrock, they'll rock your world. Bajoran style.
The Ready Room.
I do like that he just drops out of the sky naked. That is a perfect way to introduce Q. And then just before we cut to the credits, they get this great shot of him looking up at Picard, and he's like, hey, what up?
To the journey!
My question is, what would Janeway have in place of banana pancakes? Because that's B'Elanna's thing. Would Janeway's be coffee ice cream?
I was just about to say coffee ice cream. My lips were forming the syllables to say coffee ice cream. Warp 5.
I remember watching Broken Bow when Enterprise first debuted when I was in high school. I remember revisiting it now in full, and I had forgotten the fact that the Future Guy had actually played an integral role from the get-go with Silic and the Suliban, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I know that both of us will come out of it okay, but since Matthew... is not used to sparring with either of us, I'm afraid that he's going to be a bloody mess lying on the floor of the 602 Club.
The 602 Club.
You know, that's Bryce Dallas Howard's decision. She wanted to do that. She made the decision that the character wouldn't get out of these heels, which to me said, this character has changed some. Like, she has learned some things, but there are some things about her that are not going to change.
Literary Treks.
You know, Bajor getting through the occupation with its faith, and this faith kind of coming back in Cardassia and helping them kind of get through, you know, their darkest hour.
Yeah, I definitely do like kind of how it's come full circle.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I tried different action figures. I tried Black Widow. I tried the Black Widow from the Hot Toys Black Widow. Too small. It wouldn't work with
really?
The other action. Yeah, it didn't photograph quite.
But tell everyone why you're photographing action for you.
Women at Warp.
So she definitely knows cats. I say that right off the bat.
She knows cats and Bones.
Yes, definitely. Of course Bones would get annoyed with all the cat fur.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Guys, check out these shows. You can find... everything we've been talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and far, far away. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, you know, hit the subscribe button. Give us a star rating and reviews. I really appreciate all the listeners who have already done that. It means so much to me. When I see a new star rating and review there, it really, honestly, it makes my day. But it also means that I know that other people are finding it easier. They're finding the 602 Club easier because of you. If you're not an Apple user, don't worry. You can find the shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from the website. Grab the RSS link as well. Now, this is probably one of the most important things here on Trek FM is the membership that we have with people through Patreon. If you would love to support our network, as we are a listener-supported network, we're a lot like PBS. Without you, we can't make this happen. We'd love for you to check everything out at patreon.com/trekfm. You can see all the goals we're trying to reach and the milestone contribution levels, because there's some great perks that come with this. My associate producer here gets exclusive access to the content that I produce here before anybody else. So he gets to listen to the 602 Club before anyone because of his membership with us on Patreon at a certain level. We've got plenty of those things for you to check out. We really do appreciate your support. Again, that's at patreon.com/trekfm. Got to thank my executive producers, Christopher Jones, and of course, Norman Lau. I love those guys. I really appreciate them. And of course, my associate producer, Ken Tripp. Thank you so much for supporting us on Patreon as you do and choosing the 602 Club to be the associate producer of. Guys, I'd love to hear your thoughts. John and I are so excited to hear what you guys have to say about Rebels Season 2. You can send us a contact there at trek.fm/contact. You could leave us a voicemail. That would be a lot of fun. Look on the sidebar on the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. We are on Twitter at TrekFM, Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM, and of course, I know we're going to be talking about this all over the Babel Conference. Just type Babel into the search field on Facebook, or you can make it easy on yourself. Go to the website at Trek.FM, click discussion on the menu bar. John, I can't believe we're already through the premiere of Season 2 of Rebels, and it feels like not only will the rest of the season be on us before we know it, but Episode 7, so... Jeez, can you believe it?
I can, because this will be a year long remembered. It has seen the return of Star Wars Rebels. It will soon see the return of Episode 7. Or words to that effect.
Love it. Well, where can we find you online and tell everybody about the podcast that you do here in the network and elsewhere?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Kessel Junkie, KesselJunkie. I also have the distinct pleasure of appearing on Commentary Trek Stars with Mike.
That's that five-star review podcast,
isn't it? It is a five-star podcast. I thoroughly encourage you all to listen to Commentary Trek Stars. I also co-host a podcast with my buddy Craig called Words with Nerds. It airs every Thursday on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, etc., etc., etc. And hope to hear you guys and hear from you guys and all of that stuff. But Matt, it's always a distinct pleasure to be here on the 602 Club. I look forward to it every time. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, I couldn't do, and as we've discussed, it is now in the 602 Club bylaws that if we were talking about Star Wars, John Mills must be present. If you are not, Ruby kind of kicks my ass out until you show up. And so I'm always glad to share the floor when we're talking Star Wars. And honestly, it's so funny because I think we could probably just talk Star Wars every day and probably not get tired of it.
True.
Other people might. But we wouldn't.
Oh, balderdash. Not a chance.
Sheer poppycock, that is.
That's right.
Well, guys, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing The Orb with Christopher Jones. And we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine on that show. Have a great time. You can find me on Literary Treks with Dan. We talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek, as well as being able to interview authors about their latest books. And then you can find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Do some reviews on there of movies and books and just things that are important to me, so I hope you'll check it out. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And y'all come back now, you hear?